Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Big color, bigger savings. Sherwin-Williams Super Sale is here. Get 40% off paints and stains June 5th through the 11th with prices starting at $30.89. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hey everyone, before the show gets going, I'd just like to let you know I was a guest on the podcast Missing in the Carolinas. Renee and I talk about true crime, obviously, how I find my stories, and our obsession with the Love Trapped podcast. So, you know, go check that out. Thanks. Here's the show.
I want to be humble, but yet I like to get the word out that here's this another podcast, but I don't want to do it and say, hey, look at me, and I'm on this podcast.
You're so Midwestern. Phil White grew up in Wisconsin, and while Phil didn't move around much in his life, that doesn't mean he hasn't done his fair share of exploring.
You know, I was a Boy Scout, and I just loved the camping and the adventure. And then there was a pretty big lull, raised my kids. And then we just got back into it, this group of friends.
How did you meet the two friends that you had with you?
There was a biking group that started after work. That's where we all met. And that in spin class. We did a spin class at the Y. I met Dave there. But otherwise, it was a biking group that would leave one of the bike establishments, and we just got to know each other and then ventured out into different activities. And we just did a lot of kayaking, biking, winter camping. Then we started getting into mountain climbing and a lot of hiking. And it was just positive, pure pressure.
Phil and his friends Dave and Kevin planned a trip to the Grand Tetons in August of 2013. So was this supposed to be like a hike or like a climb?
It was a hike. We had climbed Mount Hood and some other smaller peaks. And our goal was to, rather than do the Grand Teton, let's do the Middle Teton, which I read about is pretty not, should not be real technical. And we also brought our kayaks and our fat bikes. So it was going to be a combo climb for a couple days, and then kayak and then fat bike. Unfortunately, the climb was first.
This is Live to Tell, the podcast where I talk to some of the bravest people who have been through the most horrifying things and lived to tell the tale. I'm Caitlin Van Maul.
What was the weather like that day?
It was a beautiful day. Our plan was to backpack up to about 10,000 feet, and we set up camp, and then the next morning to get up and hike. And it was a bright, sunny day.
When you're hiking, do you guys like talk, or is it quiet?
Oh no, we talk for sure. Well, two things we don't talk about, and that's religion and politics.
Sure.
We keep that out. But otherwise, it's pretty much our health, our kids. Hey, did you see that over there? And
the friends started out early that morning and had already been hiking for over an hour by 9 o'clock when they started to hear something weird.
It started out as just small pebbles coming down, and then it just got just super, super loud, and it was like nothing like I've ever heard before.
When you became aware of what was happening, what goes through your mind of like, oh, this is a rock slide?
I was definitely scared. My two friends ran one way, of course, and I ran the other way, and I thought I was pretty well protected. Sure, there was a big boulder behind me that I tried to duck in to escape the falling rocks coming over me, which saved my life. But then it started to backfill in up towards me. And that's when it was just like, it started coming like back up the mountain. Some of the rocks towards me and filling in.
So how were you hit?
It was just kind of a backfill, and it just kept getting fuller and fuller and fuller. But some of these boulders were the size of vehicles.
Right. How big was the one you were hiding behind?
That was probably like a VW bug. And then it was pretty much like over my head. And, you know, I never lost consciousness. You know, it's just weird. I brought my arm up like this to protect my head.
So imagine his left forearm is over the top of his head to protect it.
Then I could just feel this bone just snap. But I knew my head was all right. So, you know, I was still conscious. I was hurting, but I think I was not hurting real bad because I think I was in shock.
Yeah.
And then when it was over with, it was just an eerie, absolute silence. And then you could see the dust in the air from the rocks. And it's just, oh man, this isn't good.
Where did the other two go?
They ran to the left and I'm guessing maybe 20 yards to the left. And where the rock slide came down, I was just in the wrong place compared to those guys.
His friends were totally fine. And Phil was buried and broken. And yet...
My first thought was, I hope those guys, you know, are all right. I hollered over at my friends and I said, hey, you guys all right? And they said, yeah, how about you? And I says, well, I'm not sure. And then I was buried over my head and I started carrying some of the rocks down and off of me. And I looked down. The big thing for me is when I looked down and I mean, there was blood and I had blood all over my head and stuff, but I know head bleeds, you know, it just takes a little cut. And it looks terrible. And then when I looked down, I mean, the bones, you know, one leg is pointing one direction, the other leg's pointing the other direction. You know, I had a compound fracture of the femur, the bone was sticking out. Tibia. I knew that it was venous blood, not arterial blood.
Phil had worked in a hospital his whole career, so he knew that this meant the bleeding would be slower.
And that was like, oh, it's probably going to be okay.
It's not, I don't think, a common thought when people see their own bones is, I'll be fine.
Well, that's true. You know, I didn't lose consciousness. Maybe I should have. It would have been more relaxing. I don't know. But, you know, I worked in the ER and, you know, trauma is a bad thing, but I know a person can recover from trauma.
Sure.
If you get the proper help. So I felt a little more assured, but I just wanted to get unburied and get help.
Dave and Kevin had started to dig Phil out.
They started taking the rocks off of me. But the unfortunate thing is if you start taking the rocks that are right next to me, the sides collapse in. So they had to start digging in a large perimeter around me. And these were big, big, big rocks. And like Dave said, he got all the super strength all of a sudden trying to remove these boulders. And Dave went down to try to get some help because there was no cell coverage. And there was he ran into a fella who had what they call a spot.
A spot is basically a panic button with GPS, but you only use it if things are super serious.
And the guy was reluctant to, just for real, we can't press this button unless you, well, he did activate it. So I knew that help was coming. I know Dave and Kevin went off to one side and were talking and they were saying, well, boy, is Phil going to make it? I don't know about this. And I hollered over at him. You know, I can hear you guys. Just
thanks, friends. The guys managed to pull Phil out of the rock pile and laid him down while they waited for help to get there.
I was getting impatient. You know, you just want things, you just want to get out of there as fast as you can. I know I was going in shock. You know, things go through your mind, having to put these guys through this, making sure all the rescue workers are, don't anybody else get hurt. Don't anybody else get hurt. I didn't want to be selfish. And then, of course, I think of my wife and my kids back home. I mean, my wife was working from home, and I think back of that phone call, how scary that was for her. And you know, with the internet now, man, news just traveled so fast, so fast. I mean, the hospital that I worked at in the clinic in Marshfield, the same helicopter service ran the one that went to Idaho. It was the same company. And it was a matter of minutes that everybody back home knew about what was taking place instantly.
So Phil's home hospital knew he was hurt while he was still waiting on the helicopter to pick him up. But paramedics on foot got to him first and started to assess the situation.
And then they started doing some first aid. Well, they tried to give me some pain medication. They tried to start an IV. None of it worked. So it was just a matter of getting me down to a different environment where other personnel could take over. The helicopter came, but it just made a big circle. And I thought, oh, why is it turning around? Well, it couldn't land where I was. So they landed, brought some rescue workers up to me, which was, oh, help is here. And then they did what they call a short haul with the helicopter, where they put me in a wire basket. You know, people ask the most painful part. Well, the most painful part was when they put in that wire basket, and then when they put that strap across my lower legs, 0 to 10, that would be my 10 there. And then the rescue worker said, you know, once we get airborne, everything is going to be a little more relaxed and that tension will be gone, which it was. I went down the valley in the basket, totally conscious. I know I remember I was in like a huge like sleeping bag, and there was a guy tethered to the basket as well, a rescue worker. And I says, hey, man, can you unzip it a little bit so I can look out? I was like, watch, I'm not coming down. And then we flew down, I think it's called Lupine Meadows, where the triage area was set up with doctors were there, EMTs, paramedics.
Did the doctors in the meadow tell you anything about, you might not walk, you're going to be fine? What did they tell you?
You know, they did not communicate much with me. They were kind of communicating amongst themselves. And I did not ask any questions. I remember rattling off my medical history number from my clinic. And it's like, well, what good is that? And then I remember being on top, them offering me, you know, just take a sip of water and stuff. And I said, no, I says, I know I need to be, can't have anything because I know I'm going to have surgeries. And I didn't want anything delayed in my recovery from surgery, or that they'd be able to do surgery. Later, I found out that, no, in a situation like this, they're taking you in no matter if you had anything to eat or drink. And then I got on the Cadillac helicopter that flew me to the medical center in Idaho Falls.
Can you walk me through your injuries?
Sure. I had a compound fracture, open fracture of my left femur, a compound fracture of my tibia. I had a fractured ulna, but I mean, my arm was bent in a different direction, but it was a closed fracture.
Ooh.
I did lose the tip of my finger.
Phil held up his hand and showed me his pointer finger that's missing the top part.
Which is great story.
I knew that, but I was also surprised.
It's a great story with my grandkids. Well, hey, how many fingernails do you have, Owen? Oh, you got 10? I only got 9.
Fingertips aside, while Phil was being flown around, his friends had to stay behind and pack up their gear.
And I just, the more I think about it, what they went through, I know it had to be tough for them. And then they had the work of going back down, grabbing my gear, our campsite, which we left up, and then doing another, I don't know how many hour hike to the bottom, and then not knowing if their friend is going to make it or not.
One of the doctors from the meadow called Phil's wife to let her know what happened.
And said, you know, this isn't good. You should better come out. And my wife, God bless, she doesn't travel. She's probably flown, I count on one hand. So I enlisted my brother, Joe, who's does a lot more traveling. And they flew out and met me.
What was seeing your wife like for the first time when she finally got there?
I might have seen her when she first got out there, but I was pretty well, I think, medicated, just coming back from my first surgery. The second surgery, I do remember her there, and it felt good. It felt great to see her and my brother.
How many surgeries did you have?
Two.
Oh.
They fixed both my legs in one surgery, and then they went back the next day and did surgery on my arm. You know, the unique thing was, is I forget the doctor's name. I wish I could give him a shout out. But he came to see me every day while I was there, even in the rehab in Idaho Falls. He's a young guy. He says, you know, Phil, this was the first major case I've ever done by myself. And it's like, wow. And I think he took pride in taking care of me. And
were you also like, I'm glad you didn't tell me that before?
No, because, you know, a young surgeon is all right. You know, they want to prove themselves, and they're, you know, he made more visits than other surgeons would have. I mean, every day he walked way over to the rehab part that checked up on me. So it was kind of unique, you know, telling me that. That was all good. The people out there, too, in Idaho Falls were tremendous. It's just, it was crazy where I was sent to, because I actually, the physician that I worked with, in-laws were on the board of directors of this hospital. And they came and said, Phil, if there's anything you're not happy with, there's anything you need, here's my number. There was a person from Marshfield,
where Phil lived,
who had no idea who I was, but she had heard that there was somebody from Marshfield that was in an accident. She just came up and said, well, here we had mutual friends, and she lived like two blocks from the hospital, and invited my wife, who came out there to stay with her and cooked her meals and stuff while I was there. And it's just like, wow, this is great.
We'll be right back. But also, if you don't like ads, you can get ad-free episodes for just $2 a month at patreon.com/livetotell.
Okay. Imagine a podcast centered around New York State and all the oddities that come with it.
Okay.
Imagine thrilling stories about haunted apartments, missing movie stars, gruesome murders.
Yeah, Adam, that already exists. We do that.
No. I mean, imagine a show that takes deep dives into Bigfoot, Mothman, aliens, poltergeists, but all in New York.
Adam, that is our show.
Oh, well, you know what? You're right. That is our show. You're right. Yes.
Check out the New York Mystery Machine, where we delve into New York's biggest hauntings, true crimes, disappearances, and more.
Available wherever you listen to your podcasts. The New York Mystery Machine.
Imagine it's like Tammany Hall, but for ghosts.
Very funny.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
While the people of Idaho Falls went above and beyond for Phil, there really is no place like home.
I wanted to do my rehab back here in Marshfield. I wanted to come home.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do my 3 months, 4 months of rehab in Idaho Falls. Well, the question was, how do I get home? We tried a private aircraft, ambulance, medical evacuation. It was like $10,000, but we have to do it. We have to do it. And then my son was good. People were donating in their RVs to come out and get me. Well, somehow a friend of a friend of a coworker said that, you know, Phil, if you've taken out this optional life term insurance, check out this medical evacuation plan. That'll get you home. Well, I called this 1-800 number and it was kind of like press one, press two. I gave a brief summary of what was taking place. And I thought, well, this isn't going anywhere. Well, then they called and said, we're going to come pick you and your wife up and fly home. Totally freaks. And I broke down.
No.
You know, and this insurance is like, it's like this optional term life insurance with this travel insurance. I mean, it's like $2 a paycheck, you know?
Phil, of course, was excited to be going home, but his community was also excited to have him back.
I was on the Learjet, landed in Marshfield with my wife and I. There was actually, I got photos, there was actually a welcoming party there that followed the ambulance to my nursing home room.
Aww.
And my room was all decorated. One of the nurses came in and said, is there anything that you need right away? And there was like four or five of my friends were there. And the first thing they says, yeah, we need a bottle opener. We all need to have a beer. And she started laughing. Okay. She brought a can opener in and she says, I'll be back when things quiet down and we got to get some information from you. And the people there too at the nursing home, they were so helpful. And you know, I was there not to be taken care of at all, but to learn to take care of myself.
Well, be taken care of until you could do that.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, and when I was rehabbing, you know, I had a high school friend, Pat, that we chummed around all through high school. Then, of course, after high school, I moved to 10 miles away to Spencer and we had kids. And, you know, you don't keep in contact like you did in high school.
Yeah.
But he would somehow he showed up every day during my therapy at the rehab center when I had to learn to climb those stairs. And thank God he was there because, man, he pushed me. And I had tears coming down my eyes. And I said, I can't do it. And he's there, Phil, come on now, Phil. And it's just weird because there was not much contact for 15 years. And then he was there just like every day during this rehab stint.
Phil also made some new friends in there. Were you bored in the hospital?
No. They kept you pretty busy at the nursing home. There were two sections. I was in the rehab section, and then there was the nursing home part. Somehow they found out that I knew how to play. I don't know if you're familiar with Sheephead. It's a card game.
Mm-mm.
It's a Wisconsin card game. And they would invite me over, these seniors in their 70s, 80s, who have had strokes and not in the best of health, to play cards with them. So I always made it a point to go over there and play cards with this group, you know. And it's not so much they wanted to be spoken to, but they just kind of wanted to be heard, to let them tell their stories. I can remember the lady having a yardstick with a fly swatter. And if a card would drop, none of us were able to reach down to pick it up. But she had that yardstick and that fly swatter and go down and pick up the card. And we'd continue playing.
Necessity is the mother of invention, as they say. Phil is a great example of building a community around him. And then, and this is where I falter personally, not being afraid to lean on that community in times of need.
You know, I had tears. But 5% of the tears were from the pain. You know, I mean, the rehab wasn't easy and I was in pain, but 95% of the times I broke down but just from the support from family, friends, the community, my neighbors, the coworkers, my employers. It's like, you know, when I came back and I was in a nursing home and then I got discharged home, I was still dependent on these people. And, you know, you say, people always come up to say, hey, is there anything you need? Let me know. But how many people really take advantage of that? How many people really mean it when they say somebody's going through something? Hey, if there's anything you need, let me know. Well, I actually took advantage of that. My wife was able to continue to work from home, and I had to go to therapy, you know, 3-4 times a week. And I had a whole list of people that said, oh, we're there for you. You know, we'll give you a ride to therapy. And then the meals, and then it was in the fall, rake the leaves. And that's where I broke down, is that I didn't know I had that many people that cared. I keep a tote downstairs. I saved all my texts and emails and letters and get well cards. Whenever I do feel down, I go down and open that up. And it's just, that brings tears to my eyes.
Yeah. Is it hard for you to ask for help?
No. No. No, I'm not afraid. No, I'm not one of these. I'll take advantage. And I hope they take advantage of me as well.
But Phil wanted to regain his independence as quickly as he could.
Everything took longer. I mean, I waddled to the mailbox to get the mail. I mean, it took me 5 minutes and normally it's 30 seconds. I mean, it was hard for Cheryl.
His wife.
Because she'd have to lift the wheelchair out of the car if we would go shopping or go anyplace. And then it was just slowly taking my time. I do have to give a shout out to our local YMCA, because with my rehab, they taught me the exercises to do, but then this is what you have to do at the YMCA. And they had all the same equipment. I mean, they had a therapy pool, and they played a big, big part in my recovery. You know, I wanted to get back into running because I used to do all these 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons. And I can just remember going to the Y and just, man, just my gait was terrible. And it just slowly got better and better, but not to where I was ever prior to the rock slide.
And he also had to get back to work.
You know, I can't say enough good things about my place of employment. They just bent over backwards. Anything I needed, anything my wife needed, they said, take as long as it takes for you to get better. They held my job.
What was going back to work like?
Oh, man, I didn't know what to expect. And they told me, Phil, just work with Janine, who Janine and I were the two technicians in the pain clinic. And she said, you just work with Janine, do whatever you can, and take your time. And, man, they were, I can't say enough how wonderful they were. But I did give them, you know, prior to this 30 years, and I gave them another 10 years after the accident. So,
did working in a pain clinic help you manage your own pain?
You know, I never had pains. I was given opioids, I think, for a while when I first got home. But then the big thing was, is they said, you can't be on opioids and drive, narcotics and drive. And man, I didn't have a lot of pain, and driving trumped anything else. So it was never a problem.
Phil was in his mid-50s when the rock slide happened, and just couldn't bounce back to his full capabilities after.
You know, would I do anything like that today? Absolutely not. Yeah, and that's where I'm really limited now. You know, the guys like Kevin and Dave, they've went on and they've climbed Mount Rainier. They did Kilimanjaro. they go for 100-mile bike rides instead of my 20-mile bike rides. And it is, I feel fortunate that I'm still around, but I still get down knowing that I was invited, but they knew that it's something that I couldn't do and shouldn't do. You know, my legs still ache in the evening. I mean, I've got these rollers I put on my legs, but all things considered, I'm doing well. You know, I used to be a big runner, and now it's walk for 2 minutes and jog for a minute, walk for 2 minutes, jog for a minute. It's a totally different chapter. And I was also diagnosed with cancer 2015, I think. And I went through surgery and radiation, but things are okay on that front. So that was 7 years ago.
So this happens in 2013.
Yes. And I think my cancer was diagnosed in 2015, maybe.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
How long had you felt like back to normal, if you even got to that point before being diagnosed?
Oh, never back to normal. No. I mean, I still, when I go upstairs, I use a railing. When I'm hiking, I use hiking poles. We've got a group now. We call ourselves the Ice Agers, and there's a group of four or five of us. We try to hike a section of the Ice Age Trail, you know, once every couple weeks. And it's we're all getting older. We gotta watch out for each other, and we're all in the same boat. We're all big kayakers, and the hardest thing now is just getting in and out of the kayak. You know, it's almost a two-person job, and you gotta kind of plan that you might get wet. I don't need to winter camp anymore when it's 15 below, which we have done in the past. I don't need to paddle Lake Superior anymore out to the Apostle Islands. I can just paddle some of the lakes in central Wisconsin.
Even though Phil has had to accept his limitations, surviving the rock slide taught him some things about himself and those around him.
Yeah, I think the thing with the accident is just it caused me to be a much more patient person. Plus that and retirement. But even that work in my final years, it's like, hey, life is good, man. Life is good. You start grabbing what's good in front of you and taking that in. I'm definitely more of an optimist than a pessimist. Every day is a gift, man. Every day. And you got to have faith in friends and other people, because it's not if you're going to fall, because everybody falls. But it's when you fall that those resources and those friends in that community around you to lift you up.
This is Live to Tell. I'm Caitlin Van Maul. You can follow the show on Instagram and TikTok at Live to Tell Podcast. If you enjoy today's episode, please rate, review, and subscribe. It really helps the show. I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.